Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Ksuvos is daf Lamed Hey. Okay, this is a big sugya. We are in the middle of a big sugya, so we'll do a little bit of recap, and then we'll continue from where we left off yesterday. When Lamed Al Medal, we thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is holding Mosech Nishmas, Liba Gabriela Bashmuel. The question is a very simple question. The answers are not as simple, although they're relatively straightforward. But as you'll see by the end of today's daf, you're going to need to remember a lot of things at the same time. Keep all the answers straight and organized. The general rule is that if a man is ma'anis a woman, so and he violates such an act, so he has to do a couple of things. Number one, he has to pay her money. Compensatory damages that he pays her for an assault, and number two is he also has to pay a knas. The Torah levies a fine against an individual who does such an act, but the fine itself is only limited. It's limited only to when she's an ara, or as we saw in the beginning of the parak, also when she's a ketana as well. But that's subject to a debate. When she's a bagar, she no longer receives a knas, but that's a monetary obligation he has to pay. And in addition to that, also, like any type of assault, if a man assaults another man, or in this case, a man assaulting a woman, she's also subject to malchus. There are two mishnayos and shas that describe these two different punishments. There's a mishnah here in Ksuvos that describes when a man is ma'anis a woman, so he has to pay her kanas. Chiddush of our mishnah is that he's ma'anis a woman that he's not allowed to marry, but still he has to pay her kanas. That was the chiddush of our mishnah. And the mishnah malchus says that if a man assaults a woman, even if it's someone that he's forbidden to, but he's subject to malchus. Those are the two mishnayos. With these two mishnayos in mind, so now the mishnayos are basically describing two different punishments. Our mishnah is describing the punishment of mammon. The mishnah in Malkus is describing the punishment of Malkus. The problem is, the Gemara articulates this problem on the very bottom of Lamed Alpha Mud Beis, and that is Lein Lokan Mishalim. We know that you cannot, you can't get Malkus, and you can't pay. Why can't you do both? Because the pasuk says Mishum Risha Achas Matamim. The pasuk, the Gemara says Mishum Risha Achas Matamichayvo V'itamichayv Shnei Rishayos. Because there's a general rule of punishment: you only punish once, you don't punish twice. And so, therefore, which mishnah is the default mishnah? Which mishnah is generally speaking the rule? And which mishnah is the exception? So that was the question that we addressed all the way back on Lamed Aleph Lamed Beis, and that took us through Daf Lamed Beis, Daf Lamed Gimel, and through yesterday's Daf, although we didn't finish it, Daf Lamed Aleph. And as you'll see, it will continue and finish actually today on Daf Lamed Aleph. Although not totally finished, we're still going to be discussing it. But three blot of Gemara dedicated to this question of, okay, and my counting was just wonderful. Four blot of Gemara dedicated to this question of Ein Lokan Mishalim, you can't do both. So let's just go over what we already seen, and then we're going to pick it up from where we left off. So first, the
hard to
on certain issues for sure. You'll see on certain issues, yes. So number one, there's the opinion of Ula. Ula says that mammon, that normally speaking, when there's a choice of mammon and malchus and kol hashas and kol haTorah, so mammon comes in front of malchus. You pay before you get malchus. You pay and you don't get malchus, according to Ula. How does he explain the Mishnah Malchus? So as you remember, the Mishnah Malchus that describes malchus and not payment is talking about a scenario in which there's no payment. Okay, and if you remember all the way in the beginning of the sugya, that's a long time ago. If you remember back in the beginning of the sugya, so they come up with cases where there's no mammon. But if there's mammon, so mammon is going to supersede the malchus. Rav Yochanan disagrees. Rav Yochanan says no, malchus over mammon. That if given the choice between malchus and mammon, so malchus comes first, and malchus always comes first. When I say always, of course, like every rule, there's exceptions to the rule. And Rav Yochanan notes that there are two notable exceptions to the rule. One notable exception to the rule is chavala, when a man does damage to another person, so the mammon comes in front of money. But that's befer shrips the Torah, that the Torah goes out of its way to say money comes in front of malchus, and we quoted the drushas, and that was a big part of Daf Lamed Gimel. And the other exception to the rule is Einam Zomimim. So those are the two exceptions to the rule where Mammon comes in front of Malchus, but Rav Yochanan says, but Kola Torah Kula, but and generally speaking anywhere else, Malchus comes in front of Mammon. So according to Rav Yochanan, our Mishnah Sorry, the Mishnah Malkus, of course, makes perfect sense. The Mishnah Malkus says that when a man is minus a woman, he's subject to Malkus. What about our Mishnah? Our Mishnah is describing money. So how could there be how could our Mishnah be dealing with a case of money? So the so Rav Yochanan says, well, it's very simple. Our Mishnah is talking about where there was no Hasra. If there's no Hasra, so you're not going to give him Malkus. Or if there's no Malkus, so what's left? So money's left. So Rav Yochanan says that the distinction between the two Mishnayos is whether you get Hasra or you don't get Hasra. If you get a warning, so then Malkus, and if you don't get a warning, then no Malkus. Good. Then we had a third approach to this dilemma, and that's Reish Lakish. And Reish Lakish says that the author of our Mishnayos is Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says, you get both. Okay, so the it's you know, sometimes the answer to the question is just simply the question started with faulty reasoning, although it's not really faulty reasoning. Meaning, Rabbi Meir is a shitas yachid, and the Gemara later on is going to point out it's a little difficult to say that our Mishnah is going like a das yachid and not going like the majority position. But Reish Lakish says that our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says you get both loku mishalim. Say so the couple problems that we dealt with. If you want to say that, if you're going to go with Reish Lakish's position, and that is according to Reish Lakish. So first of all, what about the Mishnah which we haven't seen yet? The Mishnah coming up on Daf Lamed Vav. The Mishnah there says that if a man is minus his daughter, so he doesn't. There is no mammon. Why is there no mammon? Because there's misa and kimle b'der abimine. But according to Reish Lakish, don't you get both? So what the Gemara then argued is misa is different. Misa and Malkus are not the same. For Misa is going to override the Mammon, but Malkus is not going to override the Mammon. Okay? I guess a way we could say it, although the Gemara doesn't put it in these terms, I'm giving it my own little spin, but maybe the way we could say it is that Misa is clearly greater than Mammon. So Misa is going to override Mammon. But when it comes to Malkus and Mammon are not, it's hard to say which one's greater than which. You could bolster that argument by the fact that Ula and Rav Yochanan are arguing over exactly that point. Meaning, what comes first? Should Malkus come first and Mammon come first? So if they're both, I don't want to say equal, they're not equal, but they're basically on the same footing with one another, so then you do both, says Rabbi Meir. But if it's Misa, so then Misa's not going to override Mammon. Okay, that's the opinion of Reish Lakish. Another problem that existed, according to the opinion of Reish Lakish, is how to understand a Braisa. And this is basically what we were dealing with, and we finished off yesterday. The Braisa talked about stealing and shechting. We know that, generally speaking, penalties in the Torah, we're learning a parak about penalty. And then if a man's minus a woman, he has to pay a 50 shekel penalty. Meaning that's in addition to all the regular compensatory damages that you have to pay. Right? The Tashlumei Nezek is in its own, that's a given. In addition to that, you also have to pay a 50 shekel kanas for the Isser of Ma'anes. There are other penalties in the Torah. The most famous one, I don't know if it's the most famous, but the popular one is kefil. You steal something and you're caught with a stolen item, so what do? So you have to pay kefil, you have to pay double the amount. As I mentioned yesterday, if you return the item on your own volition, you don't have to pay kefil. You're not penalized if you return it on your own. But if you're caught with the item, you have to pay kefil. And then there's another penalty in the Torah, and that's dal vehei. That if you steal something, and then you compound your act of theft by either shechting the item, in this case, animal. I was going to say item. Okay. You shech the animal or you sell the animal. If you do either one of those two, so then the Torah really unleashes. And the Torah says that not only do you have to pay the principal value of that which you stole, but if it's a small animal, you have to pay four times the amount of its value. If it's a large animal, if it's a par, if it's a bull, you have to pay five times the amount of this animal. Meaning, the principal plus another four for a large animal. The principal plus another three for the small animal. So the I'm right about the size of the animal. No, I think it's principal plus another five. Okay, dal vehei. Okay, sorry, I just got confused. So the Braisa describes the following scenario. Let's say you steal and you shecht on Shabbos. Let's say you steal and shecht for Avodah Zarah. Let's say you steal and shecht a shor haniskal. Shor haniskal, an animal that went through, that gored another person to death, sentenced to die, and it's this animal is Asabana. So in these three scenarios, so the Braisa says that according to Rav Meir, you have to pay tashlum meidalad vehei. You have to pay 4 or 5 times that amount. Now, why? So ostensibly the reason why is because despite the fact that you violated Shabbos, and that of course is a capital crime, but you also have to pay. What do you see from that Mishnah? That there's Misa and Tashlumin. That was the Braisa. If that Braisa is correct, the Braisa is correct. If our understanding of the Braisa is correct, so then what does that lead us to the conclusion? That even according to Rav Meir, there is Misa Meshalem, and so then we're kind of stuck back over here. Because we're saying that our Mishnah is according to Reish Lakish. Our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Meir, but the Gemara says, yeah, but according to Rav Meir, so then the daughter, one who's minus his daughter, should also be Misa Vitashlamim, as the Braisa over here indicates. To which the Gemara now says, again, this is all just still review, to which the Gemara says, no, the case of shechting is where you didn't do the act of shechting yourself, so you subcategory, right, you sub that job out. So in other words, you stole the animal, and then you gave it to another animal, and you instructed him to shech the animal. And you now are going to be on the hook for the dalad vehei. Because you didn't violate Shabbos, somebody else violated Shabbos. So the Gemara says, I understand in the world of Averis, that's not normally how things work. Ain't shliach l'dvar Avera. You can't subcontract an Avera to somebody and ask somebody else to do it, and you be liable. That's generally speaking not true. That doesn't work that way. To which the Gemara said, that's right, it doesn't work that way, generally. This is one of the notable exceptions. The Gemara, as I mentioned yesterday, Gemara in Kiddushin, second parak, there are two exceptions to the rule of, and maybe even a third, there are two exceptions to the rule, and this is one of them, that if you tell somebody to shech the animal that you stole, you are going to be on the hook for dal vehei. To which the Gemara says, that's what we're talking about over here. And now that if that's what we're talking about over here, so then the... So now we understand. So why you have to pay dal vehei? You have to pay dal vehei because somebody else shechted the animal. That other person, he's going to absorb the chil Shabbos. He's going to be chayv misa for shkita b'Shabbos. And you, on the other hand, are going to have to pay dal vehei because you stole and you were responsible for shechting an animal. Okay. Then I'm not going to go over again because it's, in other words, but everything I just said is just the structure of the Gemara, meaning literally the outline of the entire Gemara, and then the Gemara went on to explain what about Shechita B'Shabbos, which is one of the examples that were I'm sorry. Then there's the opinion of the Chachamim. The Chachamim say you're potter. The Chachamim give an exemption for doing that, meaning that you, according to the Chachamim, you're not obligated to dal vehei. Why not? Then we went on to the opinion of Rabbi Shimon because it's a shechita she'ena ruya. And then the Gemara went on to a discussion of why is that a shechita she'ena ruya. The shechita she'ena ruya means that any shechita that doesn't result in my ability to eat the animal, is considered an invalid shechita. It doesn't have the status of being shechted, which is the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. So then the Gemara went on to explain that, yeah, according to one opinion, Rabbi Yochanan Sandler, if you remember from yesterday, according to one opinion, shechting on Shabbos is an invalid shechita. It's what we call in halacha Maisa Shabbos. It's an invalid shechita. You are not allowed to benefit from the... Say clear, you're not allowed to eat the animal. You're allowed to actually get hana, you're allowed to benefit from the animal, but you're not allowed to eat the animal, and therefore it results in a shechita she'ena ruya. Okay, where we leave ourselves off over here, we're about to get to a fourth approach. But before we get to the fourth approach, we just have a couple of loose ends that we need to tie up. So we are in Lamed Aleph, Aleph, the Ulamanda Amar... Okay, no, I did that. Tovech Lavodas Kochavim. Okay, Lamed Aleph, Med Aleph, two-thirds down. First word in the line is Asha'ara, and now the Gemara continues, Toveach Lavodas Kochavim. Okay, one of the examples that we described in that brisa is where you shech the stolen animal for avodah zarah. Gemara over here is bothered by a very technical question, but it's a technical question, and we learn Gemara, and that's, you know, those are the kinds of questions that we ask. Kevin deshecha beporta itzalei. So the Gemara says, when you shech for avodah zarah, so the moment you make your first incision, that animal now has the status of what we call takrovas avodah zarah. It's being offered as avodah zarah. So now at that point in time, idach ki katavach lav demari katavach. So that means that you have removed it from ownership, from its ownership. In other words, the moment you make that first incision for avodah zarah, that's it. It has no value. It is at that point in time lost all of its value, and now it no longer belongs to the owner. You have to shecht the owner's animal and to be in order to be culpable and liable for dalvei, but over here you didn't do so. So you shecht, and again, it's a very technical question. The moment that first incision went through the animal, that's it. It's takrovas avodah zarah. So Amar Rava, so the Gemara asks a technical question, the Gemara gives a technical answer. Amar Rava ba'omer b'gemar zvicha hu ovda. So Rava says, okay, the case over here in question is talking about a case where you said, I am only going to be worshipping it as a avodah zarah when I got to the end of the shechita, the end of the ma'aseh shechita. So now when as you're shechting the animal, so it's still the animal of the owner. You shechted the animal of the owner. Actually, in this case, you subcontract somebody else to shech the animal of the owner, but still, it's the same exact point. And so that's why the Isra of Avodah Zarah is not going to remove its ownership from the original owner, and that's why you're going to be on the hook. And finally, one more loose end that we need to tie up. Shor Niskal, Lav Didehu, Dekatavach. The Gemara says, let's talk about this case of Shor Niskal. Shor Niskal doesn't make any sense. Shor Niskal, what happened? The animal gored a man to death. It was, it met its day in court, and I always find this to be an oddity. And not an oddity, it's the halacha, but just, it's, you know, it's a funny visual. An animal, in order for it to be tried, has to be tried in front of a court of 23, right? It's a capital judgment against an animal, which I understand in of itself is strange, but that's the halacha, so it needs to be tried in front of a court of 23. But anyway, the animal, at the point that it's judged, the Gemar Din, the final judgment of the court is that it is a Shor Niskal. What does that mean? That means that from this point going forward, because its destiny is that's going to die, it no longer is of the, it no longer is owned. A Shor Niskal is Asar Bachila, it's also Asar Bahana. So in other words, it has zero value, which means that nobody owns it. So the Gemara now is bothered by a very simple question. So over here, the Shor Niskal case, how can you be on the hook for Dal Vehei when you shechted something that had no value to it? It's a reasonable question. So this is now one more loose end we need to tie up. This next five lines of Gemara we could spend a lot of time on. We're not. So we're going to stay with the flow of the Gemara, but just to get through the answer, so the Gemara says like this: the case of the Shor Niskal is going to be a complex one, where I handed my animal to a custodian, right, a shomer, and I asked them to take responsibility for it. And what happens while it's entrusted in his care? A lot. The animal, while in his care of the shomer, went ahead and gored another person and killed another person and was taken to Beis Din. And there was a Gemar Din that was done to Beis Din. And so now, at this juncture in time, it has the status of Shor Niskal. It has zero value. Now, Bevei Shomer, Veganvo, I'm sorry, Venigmar Dina, Bevei Shomer, Veganvo. After the Gemar Din, I can only imagine the conversation between the shomer and the owner. You're not gonna believe this. It's very hard. Very hard to believe. So after the Negicha, after taking him to the Beis Din, after the Gemar Din, then what happens is that the animal was stolen. Ganav mi Beis Shomer, taken from the house of the Shomer. So in these circumstances, specifically in this circumstance, now when the thief shechts the animal, he's going to be on the hook for Dal Vehei. Now again, let's re-ask the same question, but now we have an answer. So let's ask the same question. I understand. He shechted something that had no value to it. So how could you be on the hook for Dal Vehei? So it doesn't have value, therefore it doesn't have an owner. So the Gemara says that even though this animal, it does not have intrinsic value to it, it represents money. And the representation of money It's significant. Rabbi Meir Savar like Rabbi Yaakov, Savar like Rabbi Shimon. Now, to arrive at this conclusion that it represents money, so we have to say two things. We have to say that Rabbi Meir holds like Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Shimon. Savar like, just give me a moment. Let's just see inside. Savar like Rabbi Yaakov, Damarav Mishad Nigmar Dino Echziru Shomer Labalav Muchzar. So, first of all, according to Rabbi Yaakov is a very interesting opinion, and that is as follows. Let's think about this shomer for a moment. How do you do with his custodial responsibility? So we're not going to give him a good grade, but he doesn't get an F. He gets, now I know I'm just speaking over here and by way of analogy, but he gets like a D minus, right? But he doesn't get an F in terms of his custodial responsibilities. In that, according to Rabbi Yaakov, even after Beis Din has a Gemar Din, and now the destiny of this animal is that it's going to die, because Beis Din had finished its Gemar Din, if he returns the animal to the original owner, even though the animal has zero value, muhzar. Good. He returned the item back that was given to him to watch. Now, granted, you understand how big of a chiddush this is. Granted that what was given to him was something of value, what he's returning is physically the same animal, but of no value, and it is a big chiddush, but that's exactly the point. The chiddush of Yaakov is that if he returns it in the state that it's in right now, even though Beis Din is going to just take it away from him and kill it, but nevertheless, if he returns it in this state, so therefore muhzar. So the custodian has fulfilled his responsibility of custodianship, although I don't think anyone would use him again. But that again, that's not the point. And Stavra like Rabbi Shimon, the Amar Davar Garam Lamamun Kamamun Dami. And we're going to add one other point, and that is Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says that something which is a causative to money is viewed as money, meaning this animal has zero value, has no intrinsic value, cannot be sold, can't be eaten, can't be benefited from. Nevertheless, from the custodian standpoint, what does this animal represent? The satisfaction of his responsibility. And so therefore, it's a davar hagorem lamamon. It's going to cause them a loss. Because if he doesn't return the animal, so what's the shomer's responsibility now? He's on the hook to pay. So even though this item itself is not money, but it represents money. And according to Rabbi Shimon, davar hagorem limamon is kimamon dami. So in all areas of halacha, anything which represents money is the status of money. And then under these very limited circumstances, this Shor HaNiskal will represent money, and therefore the thief who stole it and shechted it is therefore going to be on the hook of Dal V'Hei.
How can it represent money if it's already judged before and it has zero value?
Right. Right, and that was the question the Gemara originally asked. To which the Gemara says, under normal circumstances, you're right. You're absolutely right. It has no value. And so therefore the thief who stole it doesn't have to pay. But over here in this very limited circumstance, from the shomer's perspective, it has value. Right. Not value from the right, not value pay. For the cow itself. The cow itself has no value. But in the fact that if he returns this item, he's off the hook. He doesn't have to pay. Right. So for him it represents value. It's not actual value, but it represents value. Right? The classic example of a Devar Garm Lamamun is a note, or what we would call a check. Right? The piece of paper, does the piece of paper itself have any real value? Whatever, a penny, two. But in other words, but the value is what it represents. It represents an ability to collect. Here too, and it's not the same, but it's similar. Right? The animal for this shomer, there's no real value to the animal, but for him it represents value.
Is it paid shomer or not?
I don't know. Off the top of my head, I don't know. If there's going to be a difference.
Somebody gives somebody to keep and without paying him, is he less liable than somebody who is paid to take care of it?
In the halacha of Rabbi Yaakov, I don't know. It's a reasonable question. I'm not sure what the answer would be. Okay, Rabba Amar La Olam B'Tovech Al Yedei Atzma, and that brings us up now to our fourth opinion and our fourth answer to the question. Again, just to reset the table. How the rule is ein loka mishalim, you don't give malchus and you don't do tashlumim, and yet the Mishnah, it's one Mishnah and Ksuvos, and the Mishnah Malkos. Mishnah here is describing Mammon, the Mishnah Malkos is describing Malkos. So which one is it going to be? So we have so far the answer of Ula, default is Mammon. Rav Yochanan, default is Malkos. Reish Lakish, Amish are going like Rabbi Meir, both. And now finally we're up to the fourth opinion, that's Rabbah. So again, just to keep everything straight, we've seen so far Ula, Rav Yochanan, Reish Lakish. Those are three approaches, and now we're up to the fourth approach, and that's Rabbah. One of the very bottom.
A generation, though. Rabbah is like Yeah, right.
You're right. In other words, right. The first three are first generation Amorim. You're right. Rabbam Amar La'olam B'Tavechai De'atzmam. You shech to the animal yourself. Rabbi Meir Lokum Mashalim Islay Mesam Hashem Leislay. And Rav Meir says that you're going to get both Malkus and Tashlumim. And Rav Meir is not going to subscribe to the idea of Mesa Mashalim. Fine. Vishani Hani, the Chidushu Shechitcha Torah Beknas. Afa Gav de Mito Mishalim. So the fourth approach is as follows. When it comes to Malkus, so we say the halach is Lokum Mashalim. When it comes to Misa, the halach is Ein Misa Mashalim. What about the fact that there are two Mishnahs, each one representing both Malkus and Tashlumim? It's not Tashlumim. We are not talking about the compensatory damages that you have to pay. Because for that, you're not going to get both Malkus and Tashlumim. I'm sorry. According to Rameir, you'll get both. But over here, we're talking about Knas. We're talking about the punitive fine that was imposed by the Torah. That, there could be both. Why can there be both? Because what is kenas? He describes it as a chiddush haTorah. It's a novelty, right? Anytime you have a kenas, that means as follows: I'm paying you above what I owe. Meaning, when we're talking about compensatory damages, meaning even without a Torah, compensatory damages are exactly that: compensation. Meaning, I created a loss for you, so I'm gonna have to pay the loss. So that's compensation. That's it's intuitive. But when we're talking about kenas, meaning without a Torah, we never would have known that in addition to paying compensation, you often have to pay something above that. You have to pay kenas. So Rabbi Meir says, according to Rabbah, that is in fact true. Meaning that kenas is such a chiddush haTorah, you can pay kenas and also be subject to another penalty as well. Chiddush shechiddush haTorah bekenas afagav demikdal mishalem. Even though you're subject to death, so death is going to override almost anything, but death won't override kenas. And the reason why is because kenas is a chiddush. So Rabbah says, look, let's look at it from this perspective. So let's say you steal an animal on Shabbos, and you shecht it on Shabbos as well. Now the stealing on Shabbos, we're going to assume that in order to steal it, he violated Shabbos. How do you violate the Shabbos? Okay, could be... Right, he could be changing the domain from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah. Right, Rashi points out, by the way, that carrying the animal in of itself is not Chil Shabbos Min HaTorah. Because we have a general principle, which is that when you carry something which is alive, Chai No Se Satzmo. So carrying something alive does not result in a Chiyuv Da'araisa. It kind of supports its own weight, live weight versus dead weight. And so therefore, when carrying the animal, that by itself won't result in a Chil Shabbos. So we got to be talking about over here transferring it from one domain to another. Anyway, let's go back. Rabbah says that if the goat was stolen on Shabbos, v'tavcha b'Shabbos, so you steal it and you shecht it on Shabbos chayev, so you're going to be liable. Shekvar nischayev b'gneiv akorim shi'av aliday iser Shabbos. Because the...
I went ahead of myself.
Let's do that again, and let's do it correctly. Let's say you stole the animal. The first case that we're dealing with is where you stole the animal before Shabbos. Okay. V'tavcha b'Shabbos and yishecht it on Shabbos. Chayev. So under such circumstances, you're going to be chayev. Shekvar nischayev b'gneiv akorim shi'av aliday iser Shabbos. Okay. So then you're going to have to pay because your obligation to pay occurred before Shabbos. So therefore, you don't have the obligation to pay coming at the same time of Chil Shabbos, meaning we don't have the rule of Kim Leibed Rabbi Minei. However, Ganav V'Tavach B'Shabbos Pater. But if you steal and you shecht on Shabbos, you're going to be exempt. Why? She'im ein gneva ein tzvicha vein mechira. Because it all came about on Shabbos. Meaning, okay, and now let's say it. And now, in order to steal, and to shecht, in both cases, you violated the Shabbos in doing so. Now again, shechting on Shabbos, like, that's simple. That's a malach in the Torah. And stealing it on Shabbos, so we're going to have to say like we said a moment ago. Although I said it in the first part of the Brisa, but good. Now I corrected myself. Now we're saying it in the second half of the Brisa, which is that you transfer it from one domain to another. Okay. Under these circumstances, you're going to be exempt. You're going to be exempt. Now, let's think about this exemption. You violated the Shabbos, so you violated a capital crime, so we have the rule of Kim Leib D'Rabbi Mineh. And you're going to be exempt from paying anything that comes together with that, the kanas, and even the original value of the animal. That sounds a little bit strange. Look at Rashi. The kaimalan Rashi on Potter, the kaimalan ain mesa mashalin, because we know that according to our mayor, Kim lebe derabe minay, the kaven de akeren lo mechayev kanas nami lo mashalin. Now, it's true that you don't pay, you're not going to pay Karen, and you're also not going to pay Knas as well. Because in terms of Knas, the Torah is very clear. You have to pay four or five times the amount of the animal, not three or four. Okay, and then the end of the Rashi just simply goes on to describe that the malach is not carrying the animal because, as we pointed out, the principle of chaynosei satzmo, then Rashi at the very tail end says, or maybe the animal is bound up, and then even for carrying the animal, you'd be chayiv. Okay. And what the Gemara means is, since you're going to be exempt from the Keren, you're also going to be exempt from the Misa as well. Okay. Which means, right, just to make sure this point is clear, that if it were just the Chil Shabbos and the Kenas, if that's the only only punishments that were occurring concurrently, he'd have to pay both. And the reason why he'd have to pay both is because, again, we have a rule of Kim Leib D'Rabbi Mineh, which usually means that a capital crime is going to override anything else, but not everything else. Not Kenas. Kenas is a Chiddush, and therefore he's going to have to pay the Kenas that was imposed on Shabbos. If, however, this point is, I know this point's a little bit confusing. If, however, all the financial obligations occur on Shabbos, so that means then that he's going to, on a technicality, the thief is going to be off the hook from paying anything. Not the Karen, not the principal value of the animal, and not the Kenas as well. Now again, why not the Karen? Kam lebe derabe minei. Why not the Kenas? It's a technicality. Because the Torah says that you have to pay four or five times the amount of the animal. Because you got off on the Karen, so therefore you're not going to be paying the Kenas, because dal veheamar, the Torah says four and five, and not gimel v'dal, not three and four. Meaning, once we knock off the principal value, because of the rule of kam leib d'rabbi mineh, you knock off the kenas as well. It's super technical, but that's the way the halacha operates. So that's what Rabbi's teaching us.
And the death sentence is still in effect?
Yeah, right, correct. And it's a death sentence which is creating that exemption. So, Haya, I'm going to reread Rava from the beginning. Haya gidi ganu lo v'tavcha b'm. I'm sorry. Let's do that again. Haya gidi ganu lo v'tavcha b'Shabbos. So if I steal an animal and shecht it, steal it before Shabbos, shecht it on Shabbos, chayev. So I'm going to be chayev. Meaning chayev the Karen and the Kenas. Shekvar nischayev b'gneiva kodesh shev v'lidei Yisur Shabbos. Ganu v'tavcha b'Shabbos. But if I steal it and shecht it on Shabbos, potter. Because without the Gneva, there wouldn't be Tzvicha Mechira. And again, the way I explained it is that because all that liability comes about on Shabbos, and because of the rule of Kim Leib D'Rabbi Mineh, and because it knocks out the Karen, so therefore it's going to knock out the Knas as well. V'amar Rabba. Now the second halacha of Rabba is going to be nearly identical to the first halacha. In fact, it's going to be so similar that the Gemara in just a moment is going to say, where's the Chiddush? V'amar Rabba, Yigidiga Nolo V'tavcha B'machteris. Let's say the thief is tunneling into your house. We know, Gemara in Sanhedrin, thief is tunneling into your house, so you have every right to defend yourself. Right? What's it called? Right, domain. I know, stand your ground. I know, Florida. We're all too familiar. Okay, but in other words, you have the right. You have it right to defend your house, even if it means that you can kill them. So, in other words, this thief right now. So he's a dead man. Okay, in other words, he's chai of misa. Okay, it's a different type of misa. I mean, in other words, it's not a based in misa, but still, death is death. He's chai of misa. So in the act of tunneling, he both steals and shechts while tunneling. Chayiv shekvar nis chayiv bigneva. I'm sorry. The animal was already stolen, and the act of shechita is occurring while tunneling. So then he's going to be chayiv shekvar nis chayiv bigneva karm shiavu ledeis to machteres. Now there he's going to have to pay, because again over there what's conflicting with one another. The principal value of the animal. That occurred earlier, when he stole it, which was before the tunneling. But now during the tunneling, now he's shechting, so now it's kenas against misa. Again, the point according to Rabbah is, you get both, kenas and misa. But let's say he did both while tunneling, putter, so then he's going to be exempt. He's exempt from the principal value because of the rule of kamalei b'derabimenei. He's also going to be exempt from the kenas as well. Why? Super technicality. Because dal v'heya marachman avalo gimel v'dalet. Shimein g'neva in tzvi'cha v'in mechira. Okay, so that's the second halacha of Rabbah. It's nearly identical to the first halacha of Rabbah. In fact, tzvi'cha. The Gemara realizes what's the need for it. The Gemara says that the need for it is as follows. D'iyash minin Shabbos mishum d'isur eser olam. When it comes to Shabbos. So Shabbos, when you are liable to the death penalty on Shabbos, so there is no statute of limitation. Meaning you violated Shabbos, you went to Beis Din. Now I know, in the general procedure of Beis Din, you're going to get killed right away, but if they don't kill you today, so come back tomorrow, come back a week from now. Meaning, once you're sentenced to death, so you're going to die, eventually. Ava machteres disr shahi, but machteres, you're only a dead man during the tunneling. Once the tunneling is over, you're no longer a dead man. And now you're just a thief, and you're just going to have to pay. So I am alone. So maybe I might have thought that the exemption that's created is only for Shabbos because it's Olam. Machteres is only Yisr Shah. V'yash min machteres mishum de machteres zu aseraso. On the other hand, if Rabbah only gave us the halach of machteres, so is there a warning by machteres? No, there's not. You tunneling in, that's your warning. You're tunneling into somebody's house. Aval Shabbos, the Bai Asra, but when it comes to Shabbos, so you're only subject to the death penalty only if you received a warning. So I'm alone, so I might have thought that, again, Havamina, I might have thought then that you're going to have to pay, so Tzricha. So the Torah says, no, there's an exemption for that as well. Okay. Amar Rav Papa. The Gemara is going to bring in a couple more halachas that are related to this chiddush of Rabbah. Again, Rabbah is providing a chiddush, and that is that in the scenario of kenas, kenas is not going to override your death penalty. The death penalty will override mamon, but not kenas, because kenas is a chiddush. Amar Papa Aisa Paragunu Velo. So Rav Papa is going to tell us a halacha, which at this point in time is pretty much the same thing as what Rav is saying, and it goes like this. Let's say you have a cow that was stolen. You stole it before Shabbos, and you shecht it on Shabbos, chayiv. So you're going to be chayiv, meaning you're going to have to not only pay the principal value, but you're also going to have to pay the dal v'hei. Shikvan, and in this case, by the way, we're talking about a par, so you're going to have to pay the five-time penalty. And again, the reason why is because even though you violated Shabbos, but it's Shabbos and it's a kenas, and you do both. Let's say it was a borrowed cow. And you shechted it on Shabbos. So here, oddly enough, Pater, you're going to be exempt. Why? Because when you borrow a cow, you're not a thief. You're borrowing. When you shecht it, you know what you become with that act of shechita? You become a thief. Right? You had no right to steal, to shecht the animal. You shechted it. So now you're a thief. So the act of theft is occurring on Shabbos. So now you're going to be exempt. You're going to be exempt from everything. You're going to be exempt from having to pay back because kamlei b'derabamineh. Because you did it on Shabbos. You violated Shabbos. And also you're not going to pay the dal v'hei. And again, the same technicality. Because dal v'hei amar rachman avalo gimel v'dalet. Because once Karen is removed, the Karen is like the foundation. So once Karen goes away, so then you don't pay the kenas as well. So Amalei Rav Acha Rav Lo Rav Ashi Rav Papa Para Asalash Minan. So the Gemara asks a reasonable question. Look, Rav Papa, that wasn't that helpful. Meaning, it wasn't wrong, but what did you do? You taught us a case, the same case as Rabbah, and you swapped out a goat for a cow. Okay, good. Right, but when all said and done, how does that deserve real estate in the Gemara when all said and done, all you did is just give us the same case? So I'm like, Rav Papa Shula Asel Ashminan. Rav Papa says, no. It's not, no, it was a necessary case, and there was a chiddush to be learned. And the chiddush is she'ula. The fact is that the case started with borrowing. Sagadat chamina hov amar Rav Papa, because think about it. In the case of she'ula, when are you on the hook when you borrow an item? Answer it, and let's limit our remarks to a live animal, as you'll see why in just a moment. Misham shichu di chayv le b'mezer seha. Because we know that when you borrow an animal, the moment you're moshech, the moment you pull the animal into your property, you are not, you're not the owner of the animal, but you have all the responsibilities of taking care of that animal. Notably, you got to feed the animal. Meaning at that point in time, right, that animal is yours. In that, you have to feed it. I might have thought as follows. If that's true, maybe your meshicha is really the beginning point of your act of geneva. Meaning, even though you shechted on Shabbos, you may have constructed the following argument. I know I shechted on Shabbos, and I know that makes me a thief, but can I not argue that really my thievery begins the moment I pull on it? Because look, when I pull on it, I'm responsible. So doesn't that responsibility, can we now argue that that creates now also my, that's really the beginning of my act of theft? So that's the chiddush. The chiddush is no, it doesn't. Meaning what we're going to do is we're going to separate. We're going to bifurcate. As far as the responsibilities to feed the animal, that begins at Meshicha. Because you're a shomer. Because you're a custodian responsible to take care of the animal. To make sure that the animal is going to be returned in the same state that you borrowed it. But your own sin, meaning if some mishap happens, and when I say mishap, I mean over here in this particular case, you shechted the animal. But when an ones occurs, your responsibility of ones didn't begin back then, it begins at the point of ones. So in this case, when you shechted on Shabbos, when are you responsible for that shechita? When you actually shechted it, and not at an earlier point in time. So Rav Papa says that's a chiddush. We're going to do one more halacha, and then we're going to get back to our topic. Let's say dad leaves you a cow, and he borrowed the cow. And we'll talk in just a moment about the kids not knowing that the cow was a borrowed cow. They thought it was dad's. Okay, so during the duration of the loan, it's not a loan. So during the duration of the borrow, so they're going to use it. And they're allowed to use it. Mesa ein chayevin ba'onsa. If the animal dies, so they're not going to be chayev for the ones. They're not going to be chayev for the ones because they're not the shoal. They're not the ones who borrowed it. They're not the ones who accepted responsibility. I know the halacha seems a little bit strange because they're enjoying the benefits of she'ela, and at the same time, they're not going to be responsible for the onus. Okay, but kisvurim shel aviyam hi. So in the first case, they knew it was a barred animal. In the second case of of Rava, they thought it was dad's, meaning they didn't even know the animal was borrowed. V'tavchu v'achlua. And what do? They shech the animal, they eat the animal. Mishamim demei basar bezol. So they have to make restitution, but not for the actual value of the animal, but rather for its replacement value. I know it's the second time today we talked about replacement value, but for only for its replacement value. Why don't they have to pay for the actual value of the animal where they thought it was dad's, but they didn't know any better, and they shechted and they ate it? So so it's because they didn't know, meaning they didn't know it was a borrowed animal. So on one hand, the owner of the animal did lose. On the other hand, they didn't know, so they were given a little bit of a break. And they only have to pay back based on cheap meat. Rashi over here provides a formula in terms of how to calculate, you know, quote-unquote expensive meat versus cheap meat, right, two-thirds of its value. But you don't have to pay back the actual value of the meat that they took. However, let's go on. So we have two cases of Rava. Case number one, they know it was borrowed. Case number two, they didn't know it was borrowed. But let's say dad also left in the estate property as well. So chayav l'sham, so then they have to pay back. Okay. That last line of Rava, where land was now going to serve as security against the animal. So that if something happens to the animal, the land is there to secure. Now, now, that was going on case one or case two? Case one, they knew it was borrowed. Case two, they didn't know it was borrowed. If the land is securing the animal, and you're learning it on case number one, well, look, in case one, they knew it was borrowed. In case number two, they didn't know it was borrowed. Look, in the case where they knew it was borrowed, the land is securing the animal. In the case where they didn't know it was borrowed, for sure there the land is going to secure the animal. Upliga de Rav Papa, and that would be going against the ruling of Rav Papa. Because Rav Papa said, just a couple lines earlier, that the that when you shaft it, it's at that point in time you're going to be chayv ba'ones. Uman demasi la seifa, however, if you limit this last halacha, that land is securing against the animal, is only going on the seifa, only going on the last case, meaning where they didn't know avala reish alone, but not on the first case. Vahainu the Rav Papa, and that would be going exactly in accordance with Rav Papa, meaning that the when does the ones responsibility begin? The ones responsibility begins bishas ones, not at the inception of the shmira, but rather at the shas ones, and that goes exactly with what Rav Papa said. Okay, and now we come back. We come back now to our discussion. So let's review. We have now a fundamental problem, and that is our Mishnah in Ksuvos describes you have to pay money. The Mishnah Makos says you're going to get Makos. We know you don't get both. Which one are you going to get? So going back to the beginning of the discussion, we had Ula and we had Rav Yochanan. Ula says that our Mishnah is that money is the principal punishment that a person gets. Rav Yochanan says Malkus is the principal punishment that a person gets. Then we had Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says our Mishnahs are going like Rabbi Meir. Okay? So those are three basic approaches. And then we had Rabbah, who we just spent the last minute learning together. And Rabbah says that Kenas and Tashlum, Kenas is a Chiddush, and therefore there is Kenas and Malkus. There's Kenas and Misa. But meanwhile, the Gemara now is going to basically do a summary. I understand that Rav Yochanan doesn't like the approach of Reish Lakish, because what did Reish Lakish do? He aligned our Mishnah to go in accordance with Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir is a Das Yachid. So that's difficult. And that's why Rav Yochanan doesn't approve of Reish Lakish's approach. El Reish Lakish, my time alo amaker Rav Yochanan. But curiosity, says the Gemara, you know that Reish Lakish doesn't go with Rav Yochanan's approach. Why not? Rav Yochanan seems to be giving an excellent approach. And now what we're going to get into is a new point in this entire discussion, and really a fundamental issue. And that is as follows. What Reish Lakish is disagreeing with is not the way Rav Yochanan resolved the dilemma. His resolution is fine. What he disagrees with is a fundamental assumption that's going in Rav Yochanan's resolution. What did Rav Yochanan say? If you get a warning, so then you're going to get a pass on the money. If you don't get a warning, so then you're going to have to pay the money. Okay. Reish Lakish says, fundamentally, that's wrong. Meaning, what Rav Yochanan is saying is that when there are two punishments and they're both actual, so then A is going to knock off B. Reish Lakish says, no. When a person violates a prohibition that would warrant a penalty of Malkus, that's enough to give an exemption on the money. Meaning, even if you don't actually get punished, as long as on the books, the act which you did would deserve an Isser Malkus, I should say rather an Onish of Malkus, that's going to give you an exemption of the money. And to this now we begin, not a new chapter, but a new part of this whole discussion of I'll say Kimle B'Drabi Mine, although when we talk about Mammon and Malkus, I don't think that's the right terminology. But now the Gemara is saying, this brings us to a new point of discussion. The Azul Tamar, the Gemara says, as far as this issue is concerned, Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan are consistent. Let's say someone did an act, right? A crime against the Torah, and it would deserve it's Chayvim Misa. It would have been punishable by death, or would have been punishable by Malkus. And Davar Acher. In both cases he did a Bishogeg. He was totally unaware. And on top of that, also a monetary liability comes about. So let's say it's a simple example. Let's say I go into your house on Shabbos and I light a fire and I forgot it was Shabbos. I totally forgot it was a Shogeg. And in doing so, I also create a tremendous amount of damage. So am I going to be exempt from the damages that I created? So this is exactly the machlokas. Rav Yochanan Amar Chayav Reish Lakish Amar Patar. It's machlokas. Rav Yochanan Amar Chayav Dahalo Asru Bei. Rav Yochanan's position is, you didn't receive a warning, and you're not punishable with either death or malchus, so therefore you have to pay the money. Reish Lakish Amar Patar. Kevin Dilu Asru Bei Patar, Kilo Asru Bei Nami Patar. Because Reish Lakish's position is, it's not the punishment that's creating the exemption, it is the degree of Isser that creates the exemption. Meaning what you did could be punishable by death, by Malkus, that's going to create the exemption. So Reish Lakish says to Rav Yochanan, really? Meaning your position is correct? Think about the following. So, right, remember the Torah was describing a fight between two men. And interjects a woman, a pregnant woman, and by accident, by mistake, she was hit in the course of this fight. And if she doesn't die, I know she anesh. So the assailant has to now make restitution for all the damages that he did. So my love son mamish. So what's the Torah describing over here? Isn't the Torah describing son mamish? Meaning, if the woman doesn't die, so then you have to pay. You have to pay. But if the woman does die, regardless of whether you were warned or not warned, you're going to be exempt. So my love ason mamish lo din ason. So the Gemara says no. The Torah doesn't mean ason. It means din ason. Meaning, if you were warned and you were tried by Beis Din, then and only then are you going to be exempt. That's how Rav Yochanan would understand the pasuk. Igadami. Now what we're going to do is we're going to do this again, but just. We're going to flip around the Hava Mina Maskana. Eitzer, Rav Yochanan, Reish Lakish. It's Rav Yochanan attacking Reish Lakish, and it goes like this. V'lo ye'ye ason enoshi anesh. The Torah says that there was no ason, and you're going to punish. My love, din ason. Isn't the proper way to understand the Torah? Din ason, meaning that you didn't just kill somebody, but you were warned and tried by Beis Din, and then and only then you're going to have an exemption. Lo, ason mamish. So the Torah says, no, that's talking about mamish ason. Meaning that the woman died, and just her death alone is going to create an exemption. The Gemara now is bothered because Reish Lakish is right. Now, I know that's a funny way to say it. Reish Lakish is right. Meaning it's a machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish seems to be much more supportable because we have a braisa. V'atanda bechizkia. And now, every time going forward in your life, when you're tanda bechizkia, so this is what you should be thinking about. Meaning, this is a braisa that speaks to the idea that the exemption from money is created even if you're not actually convicted of the other crime. As long as the other crime or the other punishment is on the books and you punish a bull, that's enough to create an exemption. The Torah describes hitting a man, hitting an animal. If I do damage to another person's animal, what then becomes? I have to pay. Period. Whenever it comes to financial damages, right? I backed up into your car. Oh, I'm really sorry. Okay, good. The apology was great. But you got to pay. Meaning, when it comes to mammon, you're always on the hook. You have to pay. Right? Ones is debatable. Okay, but in other words, but under all circumstances, you have to pay. So, af makas adam, Lo tachlok bein shogeg bein b'shogeg bein b'mezet bein miskaven l'shem miskaven bein derech yirida l'derech aliyah l'chayva mammon l'pasha mammon. And similarly, although the mirror image, the opposite, is that makah adam, when you hit a person, meaning, and you kill a person, so any monetary liability that results in that is going to be exempt. And there's never going to be a distinction whether shogeg, mezid, miskaven, eno miskaven, it doesn't matter. Meaning that the exemption exists by virtue of the fact that you did something which is punishable, even though you weren't actually punished. So, that's Tanna de Bechizkia. And what that leads us to now is, how can Rav Yochanan maintain his position? Meaning, Rav Yochanan says that you're only exempt for money when you're actually punished. Now, it goes against the brain stuff. Elik yasa ravin amar chayvim misa shogigin kule ama lo pligi de peturin ki pligi bechayvim magos shogigin v'dava acher. So the Gemara says, fine, keep Tana de Bechizkia. I mean, keep it. It's a brisa. Right, Tosfos actually here has a lengthy discussion in terms of why it is absolutely uncontestable. So, because the truth of the matter is, Chizkiah is not a Tana, but anyway, leave that for now. So, ki pligi b'chayve makushogim v'dava acher. So the Gemara says like this. The Gemara says, right, if we're talking about death and mammon, exemption. Always. What the only machlokus is makos and mammon. Rabbi Yochanan Amar chayev emisus itzkish chayev makos lo itzkish, because the hekish that we just quoted, that's only with death and money, not with makos and money. And Rish Lakish Amar Potter beferish Rebbe's Torah chayev makos ke chayev emisa. And Rish Lakish's response is no, this also is going to be exempt as well. Why? Hekish. Stop here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up. What's the heckish of Reish Lakish? So that we're going to see first thing tomorrow. And this brings us to... And this brings us near to the end of this entire discussion. If you want to look at the end point is actually coming up. It's the end of the Amud Beis. Okay. What do we see so far today? We saw the halacha of Rabba. Rabba says that the Reb Meir, even though there's no misa v'tashlumim, there is knas. I'm sorry, there's no misa v'tashlumim. There is miso knas, meaning those two punishments can be levied. The reason why, according to Rabba, is because of chiddush haTorah. Knas is a chiddush. We went into a whole bunch of discussions of when does the chayv ones begin, when a custodian shechs an animal. But the conclusion over there is that the chayv ones begins at the point of ones, not the origination of shmira. And then we turn to the big discussion of today, which is really today's daf, and that is shogeg. Meaning, if you do an act which is punishable, but you're not going to get punished because you were a shogeg, is that going to create an exemption by money? So right now, where do we stand? If it's misa and mammon, for sure creates an exemption. That's time of the Bechizkiah. If it's malchus and mammon, that's a machlokus between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan, and we're right in the middle of that discussion.